This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Melissa Block, and we begin this hour with efforts to end the fighting in Darfur, Sudan. In nearly 4 years of war, more than 200,000 people have been killed in Darfur. That's according to UN estimates. More than 2 million people have been forced from their homes. And a proposal to send UN peacekeepers to Darfur has been blocked by the Sudanese government. Well, today, signs of possible movement on that. Outgoing UN Secretary General Kofi Annan said he hoped that tomorrow he will get a green light from Sudan's president for a ceasefire, and that President Bashir will approve a joint force of African Union and UN peacekeepers.
I do fervently hope that we are now at last close to rescuing the people of Darfur from their agony. But after so many disappointments, I must say I take nothing for granted.
It has been more than 2 years since the U.S. government declared the bloodshed in Darfur a genocide.
I concluded, that genocide has been committed in Darfur and that the government of Sudan and the Janjaweed bear responsibility.
That's former Secretary of State Colin Powell in September of 2004. The Janjaweed are the Arab militias who have been attacking villages, civilians and rebels alike, and are backed by the Sudanese government. The 7,000 African Union peacekeepers in Darfur have been unable to stop the fighting. The idea from the U.S. and the U.N. has been add U.N. peacekeepers, thousands more of them. Up until now, the Sudanese government has flatly rejected U.N. involvement. And when I spoke with the Sudanese chargé d'affaires in Washington, John Lueth Ukeich, he outlined only a limited U.N. role.
A significant support from the U.N. in terms of money, logistics, communications, and transportation, particularly helicopters that would make the African Union peacekeeping force very mobile. So I'm looking forward that towards the middle of 2008, you know, most of our civilians would go back to their villages, and we may even increase the number of African peacekeeping force by that time to protect villages until they have confidence of peace and stability.
You keep talking about an African Union force with support from the UN, but the UN's idea is very different from that. It's that there would actually be UN peacekeepers, more of them, in fact, along with the AU troops, the African Union troops that are already there.
I think progress will be in that direction.
But I just want to be clear that I understand what you're saying. Would there actually be not just technical support, not just logistical support, but UN peacekeepers operating under a UN mandate in Darfur?
My government has not given me the last word on that yet. I cannot answer that.
Not only is the Sudanese government's position on peacekeepers different from that of the international community, but its version of what is happening in Darfur is different as well. Ambassador Ukeich told me Sudan's government does not condone the war.
We in the government of national unity do not allow any fighting to take place in Darfur.
Well, why is the Sudanese Air Force launching airstrikes over Darfur then?
It should be the government of Sudan is fighting the rebels who have not signed the peace agreement. And the rebels are attacking our defensive situations. And they are doing that in self-defense.
In self-defense?
In self-defense.
I'm curious about your perception of the war in Darfur. The United Nations has said the death toll in the last 3 years is at least 200,000. Many groups put it at far higher than that. Your government says it's barely 9,000. What is your position on that?
I don't think we are experts or statisticians to determine the number of deaths. My opinion is 9,000 is too many people. I believe the United States went to war with the Taliban and Al-Qaeda because of the 3,000 and something we were killed in the World Trade Center. And for Sudanese to lose 9,000 is a lot more terrible. I'm not in a position of talking about numbers, but I believe a large number of people might have died.
Might have died.
Yes.
You're not convinced that they have?
No, I am saying I'm not an expert in these statistics.
The reporting that we see here paints a pretty clear picture, which is that especially refugees in the camps are telling this story, that they're attacked by Janjaweed and that the Janjaweed are backed by the Sudanese government. Do you think that is a true picture of what's going on?
I cannot comment about that because I have no details about it, but we allowed the African peacekeeping force to go in because we found out that there are these bandits. We call them bandits or Janjaweed, as the media call them. They were attacking people. And we are not going to deny that it is not happening. It does. And because we are unable to stop them, that is why we allowed the African peacekeeping force to help us with it.
The claim is, though, that those Janjaweed are only able to do what they're doing because they are armed, supported, get air support from your government in Sudan.
My current government of national unity is not doing that. If it happened during the prior to comprehensive peace agreement, then I am not an expert on that because I was not there. I was not with the government, nor was I with the rebels in Darfur.
Let me ask you about one other thing here. A few things have been mentioned in the West as possible repercussions if your government does not allow peacekeepers. One would be a no-fly zone over Darfur. Another might be freezing assets or preventing travel of Sudanese officials or helping the International Criminal Court file indictments. What do you say to people who say that those are possible options?
No government would like to see a no-fly zone in his or her jurisdiction. You know, it's going to be a problem of sovereignty of the country. And I don't think it will solve the problem because what we need in Sudan now is not hostility, but a way to get out of this crisis in Darfur peacefully.
Ambassador Ukeche, thanks very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
That's Sudan's chargé d'affaires, John Lueth Ukeche. We played his remarks for Andrew Natsios, who was named President Bush's special envoy to Sudan in September. Natsios says the Sudanese government should step up.
Well, it's their country. I mean, the General Assembly of the United Nations passed this fall a very important statement. And what it says is the government of the country where a conflict's taking place, first responsibility is to protect its own people. And if it does not do that, then the international community is going to do it.
But in this case, it's not just that the Sudanese government isn't protecting its people, it's that it's actually...
It's causing the problem in the first place.
Yes, and you agree with that.
Absolutely.
Do you think the Sudanese government really has any interest in negotiating a settlement, or is what they want a military solution, destroy the opposition?
I think there are factions within the Sudanese government on this issue. The dominant faction at this point is what we would call the security faction, and they are people in the secret police, the intelligence services, the military, other parts of the National Congress Party that actually helped negotiate the North-South Peace Agreement have been now pushed to the outside, and they are not the predominant force at work here in Darfur. I'm hoping, because the defeat of the Sudanese military repeatedly in battles and the fact that the province is now in chaos, I mean, I just came back on Saturday from a week there, the Janjaweed are now turning on their funders and their equippers, the Sudanese government. They threatened the Wali, the governor of northern Darfur, and he and his entire cabinet publicly resigned and demanded that the government do something to control the Janjaweed. The Janjaweed are turning now on government officials. One Janjaweed unit last week joined a rebel group to attack government forces because the Janjaweed come from Arab tribes that themselves are destitute, and some of those units are saying, this war hasn't helped us at all. How are the poor camel herders of northern Darfur helped by this chaos? We're being now blamed by the international community, these groups are saying, for these atrocities. They're very afraid of these war crime trials. So some of the Janjaweed commanders are saying enough is enough. And I think the government really is at risk of losing control of the situation.
When you and I talked in September, I asked you then how long you would give what you called aggressive diplomacy to work, and you said it would be weeks or maybe months. And
right.
It's been months now. What's the way forward? Why is diplomacy still even on the table?
We have made some progress dealing with the Sudanese on some issues. Kofi Annan took leadership almost 2.5 months ago. We had a meeting of the Africans, the Arab states, the Europeans, the Chinese, the permanent 5 members of the Security Council. The Sudanese foreign minister and a large delegation was there. and we discussed the way forward. We have a resolution which the Sudanese government has rejected, 1706, and Kofi was able to fashion a consensus document. The Sudanese didn't agree to everything in it, but the good thing was we had the world community behind the document. And the diplomacy of the United States since then has been focused on supporting that package. What happened last week is that I met with President Bashir for a couple of hours. One issue is that the Sudanese government wants absolutely no blue-helmeted or blue-berated UN troops in Darfur. They want only African Union troops. We said, well, the UN is not going to pay for a force that's entirely African, that it has, they have no control over. The second issue is, do you agree, Mr. President, to implement between now and the end of the year phase one of Kofi's plan? Because there are 60 UN troops waiting to go into Darfur that can't get in there because of the impasse over the berets. The heavy support package, which is phase two, contains 2,500 personnel from the United Nations. And they're not going to go into Darfur unless, under phase three, the 10,000 additional UN troops come in. Who will protect these support troops under phase two? So there is a direct connection between phase one, phase two, and three. You can't accept one phase and not the other phases. It doesn't work.
Well, that to me doesn't sound like progress. And when Condoleezza Rice says, as she did on Wednesday, we have a new chapter ahead of us, doesn't sound to me like there's a new chapter
at all.
Well,
there's a letter that's been given to President Bashir outlining these three phases and asking for the Sudanese government in writing to affirm the operational steps needed to implement it and to address the issue of the blue helmets. We have heard that the Sudanese are going to announce that they will now allow blue-helmeted troops in and that they are going to approve some of the phases. Now, how that's going to work, we're not going to know until we read the letter. If we don't have some progress this week, then there's going to be a review in January of our strategy, and we will make a decision at that point what to do.
Andrew Natsios, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Andrew Natsios is President Bush's special envoy for Sudan. He was speaking about efforts to resolve the crisis in Darfur. We also heard from Sudan's chargé d'affaires in Washington, John Lueth Ukeich.